Okay, so if you turn up Mark's Gospel, chapter 1, and keep it open, because this morning I'm going to start just by reading one verse, and then we're going to be reading other verses in Mark's Gospel and chapter 1. And they all relate to, you'll be surprised by this, they all relate to Jesus. And today, in particular, we're going to be thinking about Jesus. The writer to the letter to the Hebrews, as we know it in the Bible, he said, fix your thoughts on Jesus. Fix your thoughts on Jesus. And then later on, he says, fix your eyes on Jesus. The sense of that which is within me, fix on Jesus. That which looks out, my eyes, fix them on Jesus. Everything about us, he says, fix them, your attention upon Jesus. Now, going to begin with one verse, I said, and I'm going to stick to that. Mark's Gospel, chapter 1, verse 1. And it says, the beginning of the gospel, or the beginning of the good news about Jesus Christ, the Son of God. That's all it says, the beginning of the gospel about Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Today, we're going to be looking at two questions about Jesus. First of all, we're going to be thinking about who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? And you might think, well, this is a very obvious question. It might be that through what I say today, I say nothing new. And that's great if I say nothing new. You'll be reminded and encouraged by what you already know. That's the first question. Who is Jesus? Second question is, what made Jesus the person that he was? In other words, what made Jesus tick? Because we know at the beginning we've got this verse. We'll look at it again in a second. The beginning of the gospel about Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And therein, I suppose, is the answer. Who is Jesus? We've got it right there. But then in each of the gospels, we have a whole story about Jesus. And John, when he writes his gospel, when he gets to the end, he said, do you know what? I've only scratched the surface. He didn't say literally these words, but this is what he meant. I've only scratched the surface of the life of Jesus. Because if I had written down everything that Jesus had done, there wouldn't be enough books in the world to contain the extraordinary things that we witnessed that Jesus did. What made Jesus tick? What made him the man that he was? What made him the person that he was? What made him get through? Sometimes when times were tough, sometimes when times were apparently going great and all the crowds wanted him, what made him tick at those points? What is Jesus about? So we're looking at those two questions. Begin with good news. It's all about Jesus and the question, first of all, who was he? And the second question, what made him the person that he was? Well, we've just read this verse, the beginning of the gospel about Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And that's going to be our way of answering the first question, who was Jesus? Who was he? And perhaps thinking, what would we answer to who was Jesus? If somebody, one of your friends, somebody who knows you, somebody who knows you, go to church, said to you, who was Jesus? What would your answer be? Well, Mark, when he writes this gospel, brilliantly, I think, he begins by stating his case and saying, this is what it's all about. You know, I'm not going to kind of lead you in gently like a thriller. You know, when you read a thriller or watch a film, it leads you in gently and then catches you unawares at the end. Mark just begins by stating his case. What is this about? Well, it's about the gospel, the good news about Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And the first thing we note just right there is that Jesus is what is called the Christ. Jesus is the Christ. What that meant, I mean, that was in a sense a technical term. It was a technical phrase. But people at the time in the first century understood it. They understood what it meant. It meant that Jesus was God's chosen one. And not simply that Jesus was God's chosen one, he was the king. He was God's king. The Christ was literally the anointed one. Now, I don't know how many of you would admit to having been anointed. Have many of you been anointed? Maybe in ways you don't want to admit, but you might have been anointed. You will know the story about the prophet Samuel in the Old Testament. Samuel is told by God, well, Saul's the king, but I've had enough of Saul. He won't listen to me. I've chosen a new king. So Samuel is directed by God to go to a house where Jesse lived. Says to Jesse, bring in your sons. One by one they come in. And do you remember? The last one is David's. He's hardly worth the mention. He's the young one, the little one, disregarded by the rest of the family. All the others were fantastic and strong and handsome. I don't know if David was, maybe he was as well. But David was the one out there. But then when David came in, what did Saul do? He took oil and poured it on David's head. He was anointing him. It was an act of making David the king. And the Christ is the anointed one. So when Mark says the beginning of the gospel about Jesus Christ, he's saying this one, we understand, is the anointed one. He's the one God has anointed. No human being has come up to him and poured oil on him. But to make him king, God has done that. And so there is something right at the beginning. Who is Jesus? There's something extraordinary about this man that might catch us and cause us to say, okay, let's read the rest of the story. Let's find out who he is and what makes him tick. What made him the man that he was? Here we have Jesus the Christ, God's chosen one and God's king. King for what purpose? Well, we don't know at this point. And then we have this, the Son of God. Jesus, we're told, is the Son of God. And there is there something about a special relationship that Jesus has with God. And you'll know that through the gospel accounts, how does Jesus refer to God on all except one occasion? The answer is Father. Father. That was an extraordinary thing for, and Jesus got into trouble for it, of course. You know, this man is calling God his Father. You know, what is that about? And yet, we're told, Mark said, this is what we've come to understand. Jesus Christ, God's chosen one, God's king somehow, but also he's the Son of God. He has a relationship with God that we've never known or seen before. There's something special about him. And so in that first verse, it doesn't completely answer who is Jesus, but there's something there that should catch us and cause us to go, okay, let's find out more about this Jesus. So it's all about Jesus. Who was he? The Christ, the Son of God. Second question, what made him the person that he was? And here we need to look on just a little way to verse 9. And I'm going to put up a picture. Oh, there's the question again. I'm going to put up a picture of a T-shirt. Verse 9, if you've got it, it says this. At that time, Jesus came from Nazareth in Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. As Jesus was coming up out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open and the Spirit descending on him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, whom I love. With you, I am well pleased." So, we have these words. A voice came from heaven, "You're my Son, whom I love. With you, I am well pleased." And this relates to what made him the person that he was. What made Jesus tick? What got Jesus through? And I want to suggest that what got him through was this. You know, sometimes we might say, well, Jesus had a great mission to accomplish. And he did. You know, he had instilled in him something that he had to do, that a journey that he had to go on, footpath that he had to tread. But I want to suggest what made Jesus tick was simply this. It's not the only time in Mark, of course, where we hear these words, because when Jesus on one occasion goes up a mountain with Peter, James and John, remember, Jesus is somehow changed. You know, in the Bible it says Jesus was transfigured. He was changed and he appeared there with Elijah and Moses. And the disciples didn't know what was going on. They were scared. And yet they hear a voice. "This is my son whom I love. Listen to him." And I suppose the disciples were so frightened, they didn't hear anything. You know how that can happen? You're so distracted. Only afterwards, you go, "What was it we heard? This is my son." And I think, what made Jesus the person that he was? I think simply what we have here. A voice came from heaven, the declaration, the affirmation, "You are my son, whom I love, with you I am well pleased." And this critical thing, "whom I love." The words, "I love you," possibly the three most powerful words in the world. "I love you." And here we have them spoken by a father to his son, a father to his child. Perhaps no more powerful words can be spoken by a parent than these three words. Son, daughter, I love you. And those are the words that are captured here, where God says to Jesus, "I love you." Now, it may be that your response to this is, "Don't go there, Ed. You know, my dad never said to me, 'I love you.' It's not within my understanding of being parented or parenting. I never said it to my kids, perhaps. Maybe that's where you're at. And maybe every time I mention this kind of thing, you just go, 'Oh, come on, don't go there. Let's talk about something important. Do you know there's nothing more important?'" What made Jesus tick, I think, were these three words. His father saying in public, hey man, isn't that, that's going to the extreme. In public, his father says, "I love you. I love you, son." And throughout Jesus' life, just that deep sense, "I'm accepted. I'm accepted." That's a very powerful and very important thing. What made Jesus the person that he was? Those three words. What made Jesus the person he was? Well, these words as well. "You're my son. You're my son. You're my son and I love you. Not just I love you. You're not just anyone." Because we can say "I love you" to anybody in a sense. But to hear the words, "You're my son. You're my child. You're mine. And I love you." Again, very powerful words that say, I think, to Jesus, not just "I accept you, I love you, I accept you," but "with me, you're secure. You're my son." And so this extraordinary declaration is made in public, in front of everybody, for Jesus. What made him tick? What made him the man that he was? "I love you. And you're my son." Accepted and secure. And the third thing here is this. If I can get it. "With you, I am well pleased." How many times did your dad ever say that to you? "I'm pleased with you. Well done. It's good what you're doing. I'm looking forward to more," or whatever. "With you, I am well pleased." What made Jesus tick? I think, "I love you. You're my son, and I'm pleased with you." Do you know, I don't know whether it's the same for girls, you can tell me, but I know for boys growing up, one of the deep, passionate, aching, desperate things that I know, you know, as a man growing up, what did I want? I wanted my dad to tell me he was pleased. pleased with me. That's what I wanted. I mean, I would have said, I would have taken, I love you. Yeah? I'd have taken, you're my son. That would have been good. But what does any boy want but to hear the words, I'm pleased with you? Now, I don't know, is it the same for girls? That same, maybe it's the dad, maybe it's the mom, I don't know. You want it off, but to hear the words. And if you're like me and you never, ever in your formative years heard any of this, it's like another universe. To realize that what makes Jesus tick was precisely this. I love you. You're my son. I'm pleased with you. Accepted, secure, and affirmed. But of course, if that makes him tick, what happens from here on in? Mark has given us this right at the beginning, saying something about who he is. Well, he's the Christ, God's chosen one, the King. He's the Son of God. He has this relationship somehow with God that nobody else has. But then we have what makes him tick, what really turns him on, what gets him up in the morning. It is knowing he's loved, knowing he's secure and accepted, knowing he's affirmed. That's what keeps Jesus going. And so we have these words that follow on immediately. At once, in chapter verses 12 and 13, at once the Spirit sent him out into the desert. He was in the desert 40 days being tempted by Satan. He was with the wild animals, and angels attended him. And so what we have here, immediately after Jesus has heard the really good words, it's almost as if God, his Father, is saying, let's cut out the sentimentality. Let's make sure we never go there. Let's make sure we understand what this is about. You know, this is not drippy, soppy stuff. This is not Valentine's Day stuff. This is real. It's tough. When life is tough, he was in the desert 40 days. The other Gospels tell us he was in the desert for 40 days fasting. Mark simply says he was being tempted. What must have been going around his head? Here he is, Jesus. He understands he is the Christ, the chosen one, God's King. He is the one who is the Son of God. He is the one who in public has had God open heaven somehow and speak down to him. What is Jesus experiencing? I am special. I am great. Everybody's going to want me. You know, they heard the voice. You know, it's all about me. It's all about me. You know, the other gospel writers describe for us those temptations about his power, about his motives, about what he wants in life. The temptations that came to Jesus when life is tough. I want to suggest what kept Jesus going. Knowing you're loved, this sustains you. And this truly keeps you keeping on. And so straight away, we have this. When life is tough, reminder. Okay, no, I am loved. This is good. This is strong in my life. And it might be that you go through tough times. And the one thing we need to know, the one thing we need to remember, is God speaking to us. And maybe I should say at this point, can you imagine God? Can you imagine God somehow, you know, parting the ceiling, as it were, and speaking to you and saying, I love you? Can you imagine God doing that for you? Can you imagine God saying, you're my son, you're my daughter? You might be able to imagine that. Can you imagine God saying, I'm pleased with you? Can you imagine God saying, I'm pleased with you? Do you know what? God would say all those things to you. And I know you go, no, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. And God, do you know what God says? I agree. You're not good enough. But here it is anyway. I love you. You're mine. I'm pleased. You know, and I grew up with this kind of, I am not good enough. I really am not good enough. I don't even want to go there. But realizing, no, God says something very different to us. Now, in the tough times. It's knowing this that will keep you keeping on. And then we have this verse. The people were so amazed that they asked each other, what is this? A new teaching and with authority. He even gives orders to evil spirits and they obey him. And for this, we need to go down to verse 21, down at the bottom of the left-hand page. And it says this, they went to Capernaum. When the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. The people were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. Just then, a man in their synagogue who was possessed by an evil spirit cried out, what do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Be quiet, said Jesus sternly. Come out of him. The evil spirit shook the man violently, came out of him with a shriek. The people were so amazed, they asked each other, what is this? A new teaching and with authority. He even gives orders to evil spirits and they obey him. Now, so I put up a picture of a chain, because when somebody is possessed by an evil spirit, it's a bit like they are chained up and they are stuck. But when Jesus encounters this person who is in chains, the chain breaks. What power is at work here? What power is at work? Now, I'm a bit concerned about what I'm going to put up as the answer. Because you're going to go, isn't that nice? We do? It's nice. It's so nice. But you know, my reflection is, this is the answer. What was the power? What power did Jesus use to free this man? This is the answer. Now you could go, isn't that nice? But you know what? The power of love in Jesus, the love that God had poured out into Jesus, that Jesus had received, the power of the love that had been publicly affirmed at the baptism of Jesus, that love, when the evil spirit saw Jesus and experienced that love, the evil spirit shrieked. Okay? That is the power of love. Now, this isn't a sentimental Valentine love. This is somehow strong and vibrant and active, powerful. But it is the power of love. And I suggest to you, there is no other power at work here except the power of love. That is the power that is work, the most powerful force in the universe. And here we see very clearly it is something that brings freedom and life. So right at the beginning, we have the affirmation, this is who Jesus is. We have the words of acceptance, of love that God speaks. And then he goes out into the wilderness and it's tough. But just the memory, I would suggest, that reminder, I am loved by God. My Father accepts me. He said so in public. I'll hold on to that. Gets him through. And then as he begins to meet people, he's there in the synagogue teaching. Somebody with an evil spirit comes in and comes up against the love that is in Jesus. That somehow, I don't know, was it just flowing out of him? Was it visible? Was there something about Jesus? But the evil spirit knew what it was about and shrieked. Because the power of love that was in Jesus was so powerful. Okay? But then we have something else that happens. Nice picture here. Well, what we have is this. Jesus is becoming increasingly popular. The crowds want him. He not only has he delivered people from evil spirits, but he starts to heal people. People's lives are being turned upside down by Jesus. And then very early in the morning, so that nobody could stop him, While it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. And I want to simply put up the heading here, time with his Father. And you say, well, what's that going to do with this? Well, it's simply these words, he prayed. What do we do when we pray? What is prayer about? Prayer is fundamentally about being with God. More than anything else, prayer is about being with God. What do you think Jesus talked to his Father about? Do you know? I don't know. Maybe about the crowds, maybe about his experiences. What did God say to Jesus when Jesus was alone with him? What's the answer going to be? What's he going to say? Why did Jesus want to pray? Why did Jesus want time with his Father? So he wanted to hear again, I love you. He wanted to hear again, you're my son. He wanted to hear again, I'm pleased with you. So not just once. You know, it would be a typical dad thing to do, wouldn't it? I told you once that I love you 13 years ago. You won't remember it, but I did it. I'm not telling you again. You know, I think for Jesus, why did he pray? Because he needed just to hear that affirmation again, the acceptance again. I love you. You're my son. I'm pleased with you. And so it's not just once. It seems to me it comes again and again. And then we see it worked out in different ways. I've got this picture. And you may recognize there's three hands there, aren't there? One very gnarled up hand. Well, we get this story. A man with leprosy came to him, to Jesus, and begged him on his knees, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand to touch the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. Here we have a man who has leprosy. And of course, this is what is remaining of his fingers and thumb. They've all just been eaten away by this bacterial infection that we know as leprosy and can do terrible things to people's limbs and face and so on. And they were, people with leprosy in Jesus' day were outcasts. People, they couldn't deal with it. They'd go around with a bell. Unclean, unclean. People knew. Keep well clear. And so this man, perhaps he's heard about Jesus. Maybe he's heard that Jesus can heal people. And he goes, if you can. If you're willing, you can make me clean. And what we hear here is Jesus' response, filled with compassion. His Father has said, I love you. He meets a man possessed by an evil spirit, and the evil spirit encounters the love of God. He goes to pray, to be reminded, the voice of God, the affirmation, I love you. And then this man comes up, and of course the response of Jesus is the response of compassion. Again, it is the power of love to heal someone. So, very simply this morning, these two questions. Who is Jesus? What made Jesus the person that he was? What made Jesus tick? And of course, the answer is love. There is no greater power at work in the universe than love. Now, I know it's St. Valentine's Day tomorrow, and you're probably all going out this afternoon to make sure you're sorted for that, if you haven't done it already. But this is not a sentimental love that Jesus deals with. It is a deep, powerful, strong love. And it's a love for each one of us, a love that we can experience, a love that comes from God, of acceptance, of security, of affirmation. This is who Jesus is, and this is what makes him the man he is. Because his Father says, I love you.